Folks, this is the ultimate 1v1, the ultimate sports cast. I am Eric Jefferson, and I'm here today with my day one, LD Mitchell. What's going on, brother?
Hey, how's it going, world? This your main man, LD Mitchell, man. And as mentioned, EJ been my day one since day one, man. You know, high school time, you know, we've been rocking with each other for so long. I'm glad to be a part of this show. You know, we're going to go ahead and get it rocking for the first episode. So y'all stay tuned. This is just the beginning of something that's just going to be amazing. So once again, y'all, just sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
Man, I appreciate it, brother. You know, it's day one. It's all love. Man, but the crazy thing I was finna tell you today, I was listening to another podcast, not sports, but it was they end up talking about a topic, and the most outrageous thing I heard was one of the guys said he would take Kyrie Irving over Scottie Pippen, basically saying he was better than Scottie Pippen. And I was like, I cannot wait to tell my brother this, man. I was like, I know he's going to flip out.
Oh, man, that is absurd. I can't agree with that. Maybe if you own some fan base, oh, that's my favorite player over Scottie Pippen, then cool, that's fine. But if you're going to look at it statistically, it just doesn't. It's just not enough that Kyrie has done. Honestly, he doesn't have the leadership traits that Scottie Pippen has. Even though everyone kind of questions Scottie's leadership due to Jordan always being the front guy. But of course, when we weigh those two, come on, Scottie, number 33, you got the pick, bro.
Man, and that's what I was saying. Just off the aspect of even when Jordan was gone that year, Scottie even took them to the Eastern Conference Finals. Like Kyrie, like we seen the whole fiasco with Kyrie and Boston, and I'll be honest with you, he's gonna always be that second player. I don't see the leadership in him as far as leading a team with like young players and even some veterans. I don't just see him leading a team. I see him as a permanent Robin, to be honest with you.
I agree, man. Definitely always going to be that second option. We've given him plenty of chances to be the first option when he was first drafted with the Cavaliers. He was drafted number one in looking as the forefront guy. While he is an exceptional player in his own right, his leadership traits are not there. It's non-existent. He couldn't get the job done while he was in Cleveland alone. Once LeBron James came over and provided that one championship, I guess he felt it in his head like, oh, I can get one without LeBron James, and tried to go to the Celtics and pretty much turned that locker room into a dumpster fire. I'm sorry, Kyrie. I love you, man. But honestly, my guy, you just don't have it right now. And it's okay to be the second option. You just have to be that strong second option and not be such a baby.
And I know I'm going to get so much shit for this, but to me, Kyrie overrated. Like, I can't lie, Kyrie's overrated. Like, I don't know. I mean, don't get me wrong, he's a great player, super great player. But I think we done put so much on him as far as saying he's just, like, amazing. Like, don't get me wrong, 5-point guard. But if I had an option, even in the league today, I still wouldn't pick him first. Because you got Dame Lillard, like, Dame, to me, is my favorite point guard as of right now. And then you got the Ja Morant that's coming up. Don't get me wrong, Kyrie top five. But right now, I'm rocking with Dame just off the muscle.
Okay. You can never go wrong with Dame Dollar, man. He definitely comes in clutch when needed to. It's just that elusive win in the tournament, the final. I said the tournament because they're creating this tournament for the NBA. In case y'all haven't noticed, the NBA is back again in full effect. I think they said the 22 teams that they're going to take in. And unfortunately, if you're not part of the 22 teams, you might as well just watch from the sidelines. But again, yes, Dame Dollar is definitely someone you can pick up. I would surely pick him up over Kyrie. simply because Kyrie just isn't the strong leader that I want him to be as a point guard and also as a player. When it comes to the dynamics in the locker room and the morale is going down due to the person that's supposed to be the top guy, that's a problem, and we have to get that fixed. Kyrie decided that his time with Boston had come to an end. Time for him to go. Dame Dollar, I understand his faithfulness to the city of Portland. However, I would definitely love to see him get pushed to another team. Like a good trade with them, with Washington, have John Wall go to the Blazers and see Bradley Beal and my guy Dame Dollar play. And I think that'll be a good backcourt dynamic between those two.
I can't lie to you. Dame, don't get me wrong, he got to get out of Portland. Like, that's just not going to work. I'm sorry. Like, they're a good regular season team, but when the playoffs come, they're like, I feel like him and CJ choke. Like, either it's going to be one of the two going to choke. More likely it's been Dame. But back to Kyrie, though. If Kyrie had that dog in him, like, Dame, like, I think he'd be, like, no question down, hand down, like, number one point guard and actually, like, top five, like, NBA players right now. It just – he remind me of Melo, if you want to be honest. Like, he got the same characteristics as Melo. But with the Dame, like, I do think Dame need to leave Portland. I'd rather see – I ain't going to lie, I'm not a Lakers fan at all, but I'd rather see him with the Lakers or – I can see him with Boston, be honest with you. Like, I know they got Kemba and everything, but you got to realize, you put Dame with Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, man, I promise you, that's automatic finals. Automatic.
Man, I can't say automatic finals. Probably get them at least to the semifinals, and hopefully they can swing for the fences depending on who may be the powerhouse that they're facing against. But I don't know. It's a lot of scores on that team once you add him in the dynamics. I really appreciate what he does on the Trailblazers, but put him in with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and somebody gonna have to go. I mean, I'm quite sure they're not gonna get rid of Jason Tatum. So right now they would probably leave Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown on the table to get traded for him. And honestly, would you think that'd be worth it with those two, maybe a pick? Probably not both of them at the same time, but at least one of those players gonna go with maybe a couple of draft picks. I don't know if that'll be worth it, in my opinion, but I think he definitely would be a good asset to probably the Lakers, playing with LeBron James and also AD. Again, they would probably have to give up something for it. Maybe a player, so probably Kuzma.
Yes. Give up Kuzma. I'm sorry. Don't mean to cut y'all, but Kuzma suck. Like, I feel like they should have got rid of Kuzma. Like, if you get rid of Kuzma, you got to get rid of Caldwell Pope. Like, let's just call it what it is. I actually want to see Bradley Beal go to the Legacy too. Like, they need shooters. Bradley Beal is a shooter. I feel like if you trade Kuzma, Pope, and I don't even know. They only got any draft picks left. So, I mean, if you get rid of them two, that'd be perfect. You get you a good third-piece shooter, you'd be fine. But I'm not going to lie. Like, but Boston do got all those picks, though. I think they got, like, four for this draft coming up. And with a lot of these drafts going point guard, that's point guard heavy, I mean, you can easily slide or get a draft a point guard. Even in the lottery, you still get a great point guard with a lot of potential. But that's just how I feel about it. I mean, you know me, I'm a Dallas fan, so, and I'm glad you said something. You think they're gonna keep how they got this playoff tournament bracket thing? You think they're gonna keep that in the long run, or just...
Honestly, I would say I would say play it by ear. Since we haven't got into it quite yet, it's really hard to kind of understand it or kind of know what to look forward to in the future. But honestly, Adam Silver always been innovative in trying something new. Honestly, I know this has been kind of pressure on him and the whole league trying to get it back up and running, because it's kind of like, wow, we lost so much within that time frame for basketball. It was like everything just went to a complete pause. But going back to the tournament, if the tournament is a huge success, then I definitely do seeing them implementing that as they were speaking, possibly adding that within, not change it right then and there, but they was implementing a tournament during the All-Star weekend. I don't know how that'll fit in. Maybe that'd be too much of a haul for the teams. However, if they can do that for the finals or for the playoffs per se, translate it to a tournament and kind of just have it where the East versus West that's eliminated, I definitely would love to see more of that.
If it did, though, I think it'll be a lot of Western teams and probably like 3 Eastern teams. I'm not gonna lie to you, the Eastern Conference been trash like for over a decade now. Like, and now that LeBron's gone, it's like extra trash. So I mean, I'm just gonna call it what it is, man. I think it'll be too much of the Western Conference. I mean, it'll work, but like you said, they have to do some tweaking to it, because let's be honest, like a lot of teams, just to make it to the playoffs, you got to be over 55 in the West. So, and then the Eastern, like, if you win 40% of your games, you're, like, top 3. So, I mean, that's one thing. It's always, you probably got, like, 3 good. You got your Boston, you got the 76ers, Bucks, and maybe, like, the Toronto Raptors. But you got to look at the Western Conference, too. A lot of those teams out there are heavy hitters. So, I mean, we'll just see how it goes. But we can go into the first topic. I know we done turned this Kyrie conversation to a whole different one. But the first topic is, who was the most toxic in the front office position, Jerry Krause or Phil Jackson?
Whew, man, I've been kind of pondering on that too, because it's kind of like part of me want to say Phil Jackson, because I loathe him as a front office person, but it's kind of like he's a product of what Jerry Krause created. So it's kind of like a mentor and mentee sort of thing. But if I had to just go out there and just toss it out there, I'm going to go with Phil Jackson. I respect what he done as a player, winning 2 rings, winning, you know, 11 rings as a coach with the Bulls and the Lakers. However, when he became in the front office, it just did not work. He did exactly what he was trying to escape with Jerry Krause, because Jerry Krause would go behind his coach's back with, I guess, one of the trainers that he had hired. And it was Phil Collins too. I mean, not Phil Collins. I'm sorry, y'all. I messed it up. Not the singer. Doug Collins. We all know the legendary coach, Doug Collins. He was fired because he wasn't going along with what the trainer was telling him. And, I mean, come on, you're the head coach. It's your job to sit here and make these decisions. And if you, as front office, you're not respecting him as a coach, how can they respect you? And honestly, that is what led to Phil Jackson leaving Jerry Krause, because it started to show the toxicity after they won that last championship during the 90s in 98. It just became so toxic to the point where Phil Jackson was already gone. If he would have won at least one championship, it wouldn't even matter if he won a championship in 99. He was out of there. Jerry Krause already said he was done. So, again, Phil Jackson was gone. However, Phil Jackson became a successful coach. But he turned into Jerry Krause. He did exactly what Jerry Krause was doing. He started implementing his own, you know, opinions over the coaches. Like, no, I don't want that plan. Trying to do the triangle with players like Carmelo Anthony and Kristaps Porzingis. It just did not work. And instead of just saying, oh, okay, well, let's go back to the coaches that I've hired to actually do the job and get it done, no. You want to go there and start firing coaches. You want to sit there and fire coaches. You come up with these bogus picks that really doesn't even make sense.
I'm glad you said that, because don't get me wrong. Like, I was just looking at some things I had wrote down. Let's not get twisted. They both are trash. But my thing, I'm going to go with Jerry Krause just because the fact that I feel like he dismantled that Bulls team too early. Like, he tried to start the rebuild too early. I honestly feel that they maybe had, like, two more championships before you should start a rebuilding. And then, like I said, he, just like Phil with Carmelo, he did the same thing but with Scottie Pippen, and it made it well known. He did, and like you said, he didn't appreciate Phil Jackson or Scottie Pippen. And don't get me wrong, both of them, like I said, both made terrible at drafting, and they both failed to rebuild. But with Jerry, it's just like in one of my notes I had made, in 98, he drafted Corey Benjamin. I think he was like number 3 or 4.
Right.
And when Corey Benjamin, he played 3 seasons, averaged 5 points, 1 rebound. Like I said, after 3 seasons, he was gone. That same draft had Coutinho Mobley. So you really just basically took Corey Benjamin over Coutinho Mobley, and you took Shan Williams, who was like right before that pick, right before the Coutinho Mobley pick. And like I said, combined, they both was out of the league in less than 3 years. Then the draft pick that you hit on in 99, the number one pick, Elton Brand, which Elton was solid.
Definitely.
But his first 2 years, like I said, the first 2 years Krause drafted him, he averaged 20 points and, like, I think 20 points and 10, 11 rebounds.
Yeah, he was.
And after 2 seasons, you let him go. Like, why? And like I said, just with Jared, like, and it was just a downfall after that. And like you said, Phil picked up a lot of Jerry's traits, but we got to give credit to, we got to go back to Jerry for being the original of being terrible and toxic in his position. So I'm going to go with Jerry on this one. Don't get me wrong, Phil, he was terrible at the draft picks, like you said. Like 2014, he got Klanthony early at the 34th pick, and Giannis' brother, Giannis, at the 52nd pick, at the same draft that had Jokic, Dwight Powell, Jordan Clarkson. They didn't have any picks, and I think they didn't have a couple picks. They traded off from Phil's lack of trading. But in 2015, they did, like I said, they both came up on a good pick each. They drafted Porzingis. But after that, they traded him off of what? Off of injury. And we see what he's doing in Dallas. He's trying to get back into the rhythm, but I would have kept him. And then, 2017, I'm sorry, they drafted Frank fucking Ntilikina at 8, that had Donovan Mitchell, Bam Adebayo, John Collins. Like I said, they both were terrible, but I'm picking Jerry just because, like I said, you just dismantling that championship team and just like how everything went about with the Bulls. And I feel like he should have nurtured the situation better. Even if you thought that the team wasn't going to make it after that last championship, you could have went about it a whole different way. Like I said, he traded Steve Kerr for scraps. He traded Kukoc for scraps. It just never recovered after that. And I feel like players seen that went to the Bulls or they got traded to the Bulls, and they was like, I feel like they just left just because they were like, well, Jerry known for all this. So if he did that to Pippen, who was like one of the best in the league, hands down, what makes you think he's going to do with me? Like, and I just feel like that toxic trait was just a whole mess. So, I'm going with Jerry.
Man, I definitely respect your decision, your opinion on that. Really, Jerry is a clown himself, and he really what started the whole Phil Jackson being the fuck up excuse my language, y'all, but Phil Jackson, I guess it goes a little bit deeper than just his screw ups in the front office. Well, it was still in the front office, but still, he took it out of the front office when he started to really build a toxic relationship with both Kristaps Porzingis and Carmelo Anthony, and especially Carmelo Anthony, to the point where he made a comment about him and his friends. He referred to them as a posse, and I mean, come on, there's no room for that, man. I don't know what your intentions was, but you're in the front office. You have a responsibility for being the face of your brand. You saying things like that is going to cause a lot of suspicion. Although now in today's age, we have a president that really says whatever. So it probably won't apply now, but come on, is business ethics that he just really stepped over. So I lost a lot of respect for him once he did that, and definitely lost a lot of respect for him once he ran out for Porzingis. I couldn't respect anyone who really are willing to push away your future superstars over something that's so minute. And I feel like the Carmelo Anthony relationship, that was already done. It wasn't nothing they can do to fix that. Shoot, even with the Porzingis, it got to the point where this man threatened to not even come back to the States. And that's sad.
But you know what I think what makes it even worse, though, and what blew the whole Knicks, what made Phil Jackson, like, the media and then just social media, like, we got technology. Like I said, if you would have took Jerry Krause in today, the way Jerry Krause handled things, like, Jerry Krause handled it terribly without social media and the internet and everything. Now, if you would have take that and put him in the era we're in now with all this, man, it would have been even. I think it'd have been worse. Like, it's because with social media now, like Phil Jackson, whatever, all the stuff he said and all the things he done, now it's like reachable to everybody. Like, don't get me wrong, media did the same thing with Jerry Krause, but you gotta look how many people can get reached with social media and how things can get taken more blown up. And so, if you did that with what Jerry Krause did, I promise you, it'd have been a whole lot worse. That's why I said, like, Jerry, if you would have took Jerry Krause whole fiasco today, oh my God, like, I wouldn't know what happened. Like, it's a whole mess. But I feel you though. Phil is terrible.
Yeah.
So the next topic that I got, in which I know for a fact I got one friend, I know she's going to hate this segment. Shout out to Jessica Jones. That's my homie. Number one Duke fan. I tease about it all the time.
Jessica Jones.
But the battle of the powerhouses, Kentucky versus Duke.
Oh, now that's a good one. Legendary. That's all you can say when you hear just those two names put together. Just a legendary. And me, I'm a huge college sports fan. Well, let me back up. A college basketball fan. I love the atmosphere. I love the rivalries and just the fight, man. And two of the top teams that can really put a good rivalry has been Kentucky versus Duke. So once you think about those two teams, it's kind of hard to really say which one has the best juice or who brought the best juice. I guess it just really depends on the era and, you know, players. Kind of similar to the Boston Celtics and the Los Angeles Lakers rivalry. They had moments where the Celtics were dominating, and then it had a section where the Lakers was dominating, then it had vice versa. I don't know. It's one of those things that really take me on. But what's your intake, EJ? Which one would you pick? Would you pick Kentucky or Duke?
Oh, I'm Kentucky all day. I'm not gonna lie. I'm biased. I'm Kentucky all day. But I got the facts to back it up. Don't get me wrong. Duke is a Duke's a powerhouse. Like, I will never discredit Duke, but Kentucky, like, we can go down the list. Overall, since school history, we are 2,320 wins and 713 losses. That's 76. That's almost a 76 winning percentage. Like, don't get me wrong, Duke up there. They're 2,201 and 893, which they win percentage like 71. That's still great. Don't get me wrong. Compared to all the schools in the nation, that's phenomenal. But when you talk about Kentucky, you're talking about 56-time conference champions, 33-time conference tournament champions, 8 NCAA championships. Like, I mean, you can't beat that.
Man, you make great observation points. As far as the record goes, that Kentucky does have them beat on that number. The conference thing, ACC versus the SEC. When it comes to college basketball, those two probably has some of the top basketball players in the conferences. Kentucky, man, I don't know. I haven't seen not one team within the SEC. Maybe Florida during the late 2000s that gave them a push and whatnot. But, I mean, other than that, Kentucky has been really dominating. Whereas Duke, you know, they've had their skids where they dominated and kind of went away, dominated. So, overall, I can definitely say both teams have really, really put a lot of heat on the boards. Now, they've both been beasting. They both have very similar numbers with the Final Fours, with Kentucky having won over it with 17 Final Four appearances. And also the championships are similar, with Duke having 3 over them with 8 NCAA championships. So, for me, I'm very unbiased with these two. I don't have a clear, concise answer to say which one is most dominant. EJ, I'm going to let you be the biased one on here to be the bad guy. I'm sorry, Miss Jessica Jones. He giving you that smoke. I can't back you with this one right now.
I do you one better. Okay. Don't get me wrong, Duke, as far as the draft, they have some of the best, like, they killing, like, well, I ain't going to say killing Kentucky, but they got some good players. But if you go number one, we got like 3 number one Kentucky players that went number one in the draft. Y'all, Duke is beating us by one player. But if you look at the players that we do have that went number one, let's first off, Anthony Davis.
I was going to say Anthony Davis won.
Karl Anthony Towns and John Wall. That's our 3.
Okay.
Like, y'all, Duke had Zion, of course, Kyrie Irving. Let me make sure I know I'm missing 2, and I know people going to kill me on that one. I had a brain fart. It don't matter, because we had Karl Anthony Towns, Anthony Davis. Elton Brand. I'm tripping. I just spoke about the man earlier. So, yeah, Elton Brand, Kyrie Irving, Zion, and you had a guy named Art, but that was in the 63. We weren't born, so he don't
care. Yeah, I think one of the ones you was missing was Kristen Leitner. I think he got drafted number one from Duke.
Yep. I think that was just active players right now, but some of these standouts. But man, like I said, man, it's Kentucky. It's just something about the team. And like I said, they had championships going back to the 1940s. Well, don't get me wrong, Duke been having a hell of a run as of lately. Like, you had 91, 92, 2001, 2010, 2015. Like, we ain't won a championship since 2012. But now that players are spreading out more, and kind of being diverse with schools now. I even heard was it Mikey Williams, was thinking about going to a HB.
Yeah, that's CEO. What, when you said that, that's what I was thinking in my mind when Mikey Williams said that he was, you know, about the HBCUs on his Twitter account. That's dope. And it was like immediately as he said that, all those HBCUs just started throwing him offers. And he even got one from TSU. So, hey, let's have Mikey Mania up here. I think Nashville will go crazy if Mikey Williams come up here.
Man, I'm all for it. And I feel like more athletes should give HBCUs a chance. And just not for school purpose, just for just history. Like, we've, as people, been running to some of these big schools. And a lot of times these big schools are not for these players. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, but I think it'll be more fulfilling for us as a community if we had NBA play or NBA future NBA players go to HBCUs, and that'll help the school out as far as financially, historically, and just overall, just like I said, uplifting our community in the whole, especially in these times right now. But that'd be amazing. I think I retweeted him and everything on that. Like, just imagine if Zion would have went to like a HBCU, RJ Barrett, like, take those Duke players from last year and have them at HBCU. Man, you know how dope that'll be, and how that'll move the culture. Like, that'd have been, but you gotta understand too, that'd have been dope. And I think what the G League doing is amazing. Like, they're getting these young guys ready. They're paying them, which I feel like that's good in its own, because you taking these players, these young players, young men, and helping them reach their goal early, as far as helping their families out, and as far as helping them out financially, and then just off giving them that professional atmosphere. They not on, and the crazy thing is, people thinking, "Well, they going to the G League. Well, if basketball don't work, the NBA is actually helping them on the education part as well." So, I mean, it's a win-win situation. Like, if you want to go the college route, that's amazing. That's great. Get your education. But the college, I think the colleges need to support the players more. But with the, like I said, with the NBA coming up with these programs, I think that's going to be the future. You're going to see more players going to the G League, more players going overseas. And hopefully we get more players going to HBCUs, man. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, man, that's definitely a good wish to have. You know, just more people representing the culture of these HBCUs, because they, a lot of people may have a lot of spit about it, you know, with comments, and, you know, we don't care. It has history behind it. We all know why HBCUs exist in the first place. So why not take advantage of it and help boost these HBCUs? Because really, they were there for us when no one else wanted us. And, you know, unfortunately, I never attended HBCU myself, but, you know, I still take pride in those. But I definitely love where basketball is going in this route. You know, and you're right, with college, it's not always for everyone. You know, we have, you know, the options of going overseas. And now with players coming straight from high school getting paid to go to the G League, I've seen like a couple of these young guys that I've been watching on this channel on Snapchat. And wow, I'm like, some of these guys are amazing. Like, these young kids, they're ready. They're definitely ready. They're not quite ready to the point where they can go out there and lead an NBA team. But with the right training that the G League is provided, since it's been revamped from the D League, it's definitely helped pushing those players that's coming in young, or the players that's being assigned to those locations, to those territories, just to get some sort of like training, resculpting. I love the way this basketball going. I'm just so excited to see how everything just come into play in the near future.
So who you think is going to go number one this draft, whenever it is?
You mean like the draft pick?
Yeah. Who you think going to go number one?
Man, that's a hard one. I was going to say my boy James Wiseman, that was supposed to play for Memphis. I definitely can say James Wiseman. can push himself to be number one in the draft, simply because even though he was outed due to the whole little Penny Hardaway Memphis fiasco, he left, but he was still training and still making sure that he's owning his skills. So even with that being said, I definitely can see James Wiseman being picked at the top.
I ain't gonna lie. I like Anthony Edwards, man. Dude is a beast, man. Like, and then with him staying in Georgia, like, I think it depends on the team. I ain't gonna lie to you. If New York, by some miracle, get the number one pick, I think they should get Anthony Edwards. But some tip, like just with the Knicks, I don't know. It's just all about the Knicks that I feel like they'll fumble it. But if, like I said, if Golden State get it, I think they should get Anthony Edwards. Or if they don't want to use the pick, and I'm just throwing this out there, I think they should trade the number one pick. If the Warriors get it, they should take the number one pick and Andrew Wiggins and try to make a shot for Devin Booker.
Okay. That sounds ideal. I don't know. I guess I gotta sit there and think about that a little later. So I will get back with you a little bit later on that. But you know, I feel like there should be some sort of transition with the Warriors. I understand that they were the team to beat, and now they're at a very, very beginning stages of getting back to where they were with due to injuries, and of course with KD leaving, which was the biggest acquisition on the team, with helping them with the two rings. It's a lot that they can follow on. I honestly feel like they may pick up what's my guy, the young ball, LaMelo Ball.
They said they didn't want him. I was shocked too. That's what I was hearing. They didn't want him.
Oh, they said
it. Which I think is crazy, but that's just me. I would feel you don't want him. But like I said, he's more marketable. I think I was talking to one of my buddies, we were talking about it earlier. If New York end up getting the pick, they should go with LaMelo Ball, just because he's so marketable. And like, if he go to New York, he gonna have the green light. Don't get me wrong, RJ Barrett's nice. He's inconsistent, but he's nice. Mitch Robinson, he's fire. But I think if LaMelo went to the Knicks, he'll have a green light. Like, shoot at will, do whatever you want. They'll be his team. But with the Warriors, I mean, you got Wiggins. Wiggins, he's more consistent now than when he was with the Timberwolves. But even before the trade, he was showing that, hey, I'm going to step it up. And I think that was just because of, like, the whole Jimmy Butler fiasco, saying that he wasn't there to play basketball for the money. But I seen a more consistent Andrew Wiggins. But like I said, Devin Booker, he's not happy in Phoenix. So if anybody listening to NBA, especially with the Warriors, if you get that number one pick, package it with Wiggins and try to get Devin Booker, man. He needs to be on a winning team, and I don't see him winning in Phoenix. Like, I don't think. And like I said, DeAndre Ayton, he's good with DeAndre Ayton. People are saying the next Shaq and Kobe, which that'll never happen. But I think Devin Booker will fit more better with the Warriors because they're more run and gun. And the only adjustment you'll have to do is slide Klay over to the three, which that way he can guard LeBron, he can guard Kawhi. And then you had Devin Booker. Man, Devin Booker and Stephen Curry in the backcourt? Man, those three give you at least 130 points a game. Without a question.
There you have it, people. He done made his declaration on what he would like to see with the Warriors. Honestly, I think that would be a great acquisition, having someone of the caliber of Devin Booker. We know once he's green light, he can green bean it up like hell, just like on 2K. my only thing with that is, will Klay be willing to slide to the three? Because he seems very comfortable with playing the two, and we know he can play the three. He can play well on defending, even up to the four, in my opinion. But will he be able to handle playing the three on a consistent basis? And I guess he can get some time in the two when Devin Booker is on the bench, or, you know, depending on how they make the rotation. But that'll be my only concern. And also just him coming back from the injury, how is that going to affect him? You know, I saw him out there protest, you know, more power to you, my guy. But, you know, he might be okay. He might be okay.
I think he'll be all right, because if you look at the backcourt, Steph can make his own shot. If you put Devin Booker beside him, he can make his own shot. And that's less pressure for Klay at the two. Like, Klay at the two, he's more of just a spot-up shooter off the screen, which, I mean, that's fine. But Klay can't make his own shot. See, if you put him at the three, nobody's going to be looking for him to make his own shot. So that'll get him more opportunity to come off screens and get those more open looks. But that's how I see it. I mean, I want it to happen. DMs out there, make it happen. But before we get into the next topic, which will be our third and final, I want to do a segment called Hometown Heroes, where we just shout out some of the city's ex-athletes who's actually out here making a difference in our community. And I want to do a special shout out first hometown hero to Kevin Johnson, the coach of the Ravens down here in Chattanooga. Great ex-football player here in the city. But, man, he is an absolute great guy for these young men who's playing football. Every time I look up social media, he's out there training with these young boys, taking them out to different places. I actually ran into him. He took a group of the kids to one of the Titans games, and he's so dedicated to these young little boys, man, and I feel like we need more people like him, especially young black men, because we're all around the same age, to make a difference in these boys' lives. Because let's be honest, a lot of youth are out here without their fathers, and I feel like Kevin is amazing because he's stepping up into the community and giving some of these boys a father figure to look up to, and just taking the time out of his day, not only to help them perfect their craft, but just guide them in the right direction. So huge shout out to Kevin and everybody with the Ravens up here in Chattanooga, man. Major salute to those guys. All right,
major salute to you, KJ, man. Haven't seen you since middle school, but just hearing everything that you've done within the community is definitely a blessing to have you in there, man. So once again, let's give a good round of applause to Kevin Johnson. And I definitely do applaud him and wish him the best of luck on his team, the Ravens. But hey, keep it up, black man. We love it out there.
All right. And next and final topic, and I know I'm ready to hear your input on this one. The 89 Pistons versus the 04 Pistons. I'm gonna let you go with it, because I know you're gonna have some things to hit me back with. So I'm gonna let you go first.
Okay, man. So Pistons, when you always think about the Pistons, the first two teams come to mind is the 89 and 2004 Pistons. So, of course, those teams were critical defensively. They set the tone. Both teams I've enjoyed watching. They both inspired me, both idolizing those guys. Isaiah Thomas, I may be a little bit biased, so I'm going to go ahead and say the 89 Pistons are definitely going to be the favorite over the 04 Pistons. And, of course, I'm going to add a little bit more bias to it because I was born 89 first, and also Isaiah Thomas being my co-favorite player next to Dwayne Wade, I just have to give them that respect. You have a full team known as the Bad Boys, reputation around the league already, been known within the late 80s or so. mid to late 80s. Already been having that reputation with getting players such as Joe Mate, you know, Vinny Johnson, the microwave himself, you know, Mayhorn. You got Joe Dumars, one of the greatest two-way players of all time, with Bill Laimbeer, Mr. Guy that always wanted to fight, and Adrian Dantley in his later time, but he still was out there making great plays. And, of course, you had to be the leader of the Bad Boys, Mr. Zeke Thomas himself. Honestly, this team really put the hammer on Michael Jordan. Those guys went out there and whooped his ass. Now, I'm not really a fan of trying to hurt someone just to get, but hey, they showed that, hey, they're going to do whatever it takes to win the game. And they did exactly that by winning two back-to-back champions in 89 and 90. So I definitely got to give them the more shout out, especially with the overall team. Now, when you think of the 2004 Pistons, you think about probably the greatest starting five lineup of all time, with your boy Chauncey, Mr. Big Shot Billups at the point guard. We got Rip Hamilton, shooting guard. And we got Tayshaun Prince, small forward, Rasheed Wallace at the point. I mean, the power forward. And, of course, Mr. Big Ben himself as the center. Now, those five players together created a devastating defense within the 2000s. It was as if it was counting blocks when you go to watch them play. That was my thing. I wanted to see how many blocks Ben Wallace was going to get, because I knew he wasn't going to let anything come to the rim. I enjoyed what they've done. I've enjoyed what they was able to accomplish in 2004 when they were able to dominate the Los Angeles Lakers for another championship. However, once we compare these two teams, just really does not. I'm just going to give it to you people. 89 is always going to be over 04 in the sense of, you know, they may not have had the most points allowed, like, with the two. However, with their defense, it was much more effective. And also, they had a much vast offense to offer with it, with Joe Dumars and Isaiah Thomas both being extremely great playmakers who can pretty much do everything on the floor, versus the backcourt you have with Rip Hamilton and Chauncey Billups. Now, both guys were amazing during their times, but honestly, I can't put those two over the backcourt of Joe Dumars and Isaiah Thomas. Now, and also what makes the 89 Pistons a little bit better is the bench. Can you really think about who was on the bench for the Pistons in 2004?
I mean,
let's see. We have I can't think of the number, what, three pick, Darko Milicic. Like, he didn't even play. This man won a championship and didn't even play. So that tells you, like, they don't have a bench. I mean, they had, what, Darvin Ham and Corliss Williams and, what's his name, Lindsey Hunter. But those guys were not as dominant as the guys you had with Adrian Dantley coming off the bench for them, who wasn't as the front guy as he was before in his time during the 80s, but he could still come off the bench and lead and still dominate on both sides of the floor. So I'm sorry, Big Ben, I love you, all y'all, what y'all did, but 89 Pistons gonna always have a ticket over y'all, and I'm sticking with that.
I ain't gonna lie, I was so ready to argue with you because I thought you were gonna pick the 04 Pistons, but I'm going with 89 too. And like, I was talking to a couple guys earlier today about it. It was like you said, as far as the 04 Pistons, they had an amazing starting five, but that was it. They didn't have like really nothing else. And like, if you look at it, if you compare those two teams and you put them head to head, I promise you, two of the people on the 04 Pistons are gonna file out, and you're not gonna have, like you said, you're gonna have Darko Milicic and somebody else who probably ain't had any kind of playing time. But you got to also look at this, what the 89 Pistons did. They beat the Celtics. They swept the Celtics. The first round. Swept them. Then they swept Milwaukee.
Oh, that's when they had Sidney Moncrief, too, and he was a beast.
Exactly. They swept these folks, man. Like, and even the Celtics, they had Robert Parrish and who else they have? Let me go check. But they had some decent shooters in there. They had Ken McCall, Robert Parrish, and I want to say it was
Larry Bird,
Brian Shaw, Kevin Gamble. Like, they literally locked them down. Like, the 04 Pistons, don't get me wrong, 04 Pistons, they were locked down too, but they was 24th in points per game. Like, if you look at it, you break everything down. 89 Pistons went 63-19. 04 Pistons went 54-28. Points per game for the 89 Pistons, they was 106, but they was like, they wasn't a top tier, but they was up there. They were like 16th in points per game. But they were second in points per allowed. They only allowed 100, which, don't get me wrong, 04 Pistons only allowed 84 points. So, I mean, hey. But the offensive rating for the 89 Pistons, they were ranked number 7 in offensive rating. And then they were ranked 3rd in defense. Offensive rating for the 04 Pistons, they was like 18. Like I said, but you got 6 players on the 89 Pistons that averaged double digits. I think you had Isaiah Thomas, he had 18. Joe Dumars had 17. Lambert had, you might as well say, rounded up 14. Adrian Dantley, he had 18. Mark had 15. Vinny Johnson had 13, 14. And then you got to realize, off the bench, they had John Sally. Nobody even remember this. They had Dennis Rodman.
Of course.
Coming off the bench that time. But with all the 04 Pistons, like you said, they had a great starting five, but only 4 players averaged double digits in their whole team. You had Chauncey, who averaged 17. Rip averaged 17, 18. Tayshaun only averaged 10 that year. Rasheed Wallace had like 13, 14. That's all your double-digit players. But we know Ben Wallace wasn't playing. He wasn't really into the offense. He was more defense.
Right.
And clouded the paint up, which, I mean, can't go wrong with that. But even if you look at the following year, the earlier Pistons, they went back and then beat the Trailblazers, who had Clyde, who was led by Clyde. They had a great record. They ranked way back in the West.
Yeah, they had Clyde the Glide. They had Kevin Duckworth. What's my guy? Jerome Kersey. Rest in peace to him. Think Cliff Robinson. No, Cliff Robinson wasn't drafted in, but they had some pretty good people, man. But you know, it. Pistons
and they four-won them. Like, like they really just they ran it back. Cause even the 90 year, the 89-90, they ran it back. They beat Indiana. They swept Indiana. They gentlemen swept New York. They took Chicago to 7 games and won. And then might as well they gentlemen sweep the Blazers in the finals. So I mean, don't get me wrong. Like I said, they were just too deep. That was the main thing. They was deep, deep. Like, and I think the 89 year, John Sally and Robinson, they both was in their second year. They had a good mixture of veterans with rookies, and everybody knew their role. See, don't get me wrong, the 04 Pistons, they ran it back, but they had to go get the Spurs. And we all know how that turned out.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was – it wasn't good for them. They tried their best. They took it to 7 games. But, of course, the Spurs, they that's the type of game they live. The longer you with the Spurs, the longer it's going to hurt you. But shout-out to both teams. Overall, I think both teams were amazing during their time. You know, definitely can't go wrong with the – 04 Pistons, they really gave it a fight. Then, you know, even after that, they really still solidified who they were. But awesome job with the Detroit community, or the Detroit organization, for having two awesome teams within two different eras to just come out there and dominate the game of sports, you know, in a defensive way. And we cannot ever just go without speaking about the 2004 Pistons if we do not mention the Malice in the Palace.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. Man, oh, man, oh, man. EJ?
I can't lie. That was, like, one of the best moments. Just, and I know I'm not advocating for violence. Let's get this stuff out there. I'm not promoting violence. But we can say that was, like, one of the most electrifying, funniest things that happened in sports. I hate it that it happened, but let's think about it on both sides. Fans shouldn't do that. Like, the fans shouldn't put themselves in that position. And that's one thing, like, I was talking about earlier in the week to somebody about. Big shout out to Russell Westbrook. I know he had got to an issue with a fan, like, I think it was year for last or 2 years ago. That could have been a Madison Palace rerun. Because we all know Russell is not somebody to play with. He can go from ball play, but he'll show you what it is. So, but man, the Madison Palace though, man, that's when I got scared of Ron Artest. Like, I knew he was crazy. After that, I was like, yeah. But I can't bring up Madison Palace without that Jermaine O'Neal punch, the sliding punch, like the home plate punch.
Yeah, that was pretty much a good punch for real, because you know he definitely came out of nowhere, and it was like the guy who fell looked like a little chubby kid that just fell after trying to be on the playground. So that was.
But do you realize that out of everybody that was fighting in the ring, nobody ran up on Ben Wallace? Like, I wouldn't. Don't get me wrong, I wouldn't have ran up on him either. Like, he was too big, man. Like, he was just snatching people. I was like, Ron Artest, for the love of God, please do not run up on Ben Wallace. Because I feel like it turned out horrible, but I think it would have turned out even worse. But, man, the Madison and Palace, man, that's always going to be one of the NBA's most shocking moments ever. Because you had, what, Steven Jackson was in it?
Yeah, he was.
They got spent what, like almost half the season or a little bit more than half the season?
Yeah, Steven Jackson got suspended for a good amount of time, at least over 40 games. And Ron Artest, he was done for the rest of the season. I don't even know what to call him now. I mean, he was Ron Artest, and then he went to like Meta World Peace, and then just recently I hear he's like Meta Artest or some crazy stuff like that. But don't hit me in my jaw, man. I seen what you did to James Harden.
Man, that was like Ron Artest. He, I don't know. I'm gonna call him Ron Artest because that's what his mama called him. So I'm not gonna call you that. It's gonna always be Ron Artest to me. But man, Ron Artest. I mean, you had to realize he had a special, and he said himself it was just some mental things he was going through. And I think a lot of people need to watch that. And I think they'll get more of the Madison the Palace and all the other stuff that Ron has done, the whole change his name and everything. I think you'll get a more better understanding with his special that he had in documentary. But before we wrap up the show, I got a past game of the week. It happened December 2nd, 2004. And it had one of my favorite teams. The Dallas Mavericks. Anybody who know me know I'm a huge Dallas Mavericks fan. I'm also a Memphis Grizzlies fan. So when they play each other, I don't watch. I just look. I look at scoreboard because I don't want to root for either one of them because they both my favorite teams. But on that day, it was one of the greatest games. Like I said, they were playing the Rockets, who had T-Mac that was on fire that game.
Oh, that was that was the quadruple overtime game, right?
I think it was just one over. It was one overtime, but it was just what he did, man. He damn near had a triple double. Like, I think he let us, and he went. I know he was shooting more than half percentage on the threes. Like, he was lighting us up. But Dirk, my man Dirk, who don't get enough credit, that man had 53 points, 16 rebounds, three steals and four blocks. Like, what big man does that? Like,
man,
seen a man that do that in a while. Like, I don't even remember seeing a big man do that at all.
Not since Hakeem and what's my boy David Robinson, you know, they had those numbers. Them guys actually had a quadruple double. So, you know, that's definitely a good feat to have what Dirk did. You know, he wasn't always the most agile big man, but he can stretch the floor out there with his, you know, his length and also that herky jerky shot that he had that just like you can't even block it at this point. It's once he got it, it's
over. I ain't gonna say what happened later on in that year. We're gonna just leave. That's just gonna be history. So I'm not gonna talk about that because it's serious. But man, this been a great first. I wanna give you a huge shout out, my brother. Shout out to you for being an inspiration to me and helping me out on this podcast, man. We have so much future endeavors together, man. And go ahead, tell these folks what you got going on, man. Let them know what's in the future for you and throw your plugs out there, man.
All right, will do. So, my name, once again, LD Mitchell, everybody. I have my own separate, I have a podcast of my own that I have. It's called Prince of Universe. It's on here on podcast, it's on Spotify. So you can check it out. Definitely give you some insight of who I am as a person, which I call my mind Prince's Universe. So kind of give you a little bit of me and my mind, just let you live in it and just kind of bask in it. We talk and have just a couple of topics. My main goal is really just to bring a special guest here and there and just kind of talk about their business and kind of, you know, enjoy it in my world. So please stay tuned, everybody. Go out there and give me a shout out. Let me know what you think. Also, if you guys wouldn't mind, you know, you can also follow me on Instagram. It's going to be PrincyUniverse55, just as I say. So, you know, just go ahead, support me. Me and my man's EJ, he's going to make an appearance on there as well. So please look forward to it. But we definitely going to provide you with some great content. But hey, much love, salute to you. Until next time.
All right, you guys heard it. Follow us on Ultimate 1v1. All the usernames the same on all platforms, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We do polls. We do certain shout-outs to hometown heroes again. And we just talk sports. Your barbershop conversations. Now it's going to be who you think's better, what moment was better. So if you follow the podcast, man, just give us a listen on your commute to work. Yeah, just in traffic, anything, just give us a listen. We'll take feedback on all social media. We up for debate on everything. So, yeah. And also look out for an upcoming podcast show called Dear Brothers. It's a roundtable of Black men discussing life, parenting, different life situations, and basically just to uproot our community, not just for brothers, it's also for the women. You want to find out some of our inputs on certain situations and help us just grow overall as a community and everything. So be on the lookout for that. Once again, this was Ultimate 1v1, the first episode. Hey, we're making history.
Indeed, indeed.